right center, Barkov looking to get a step on Mete. Barkov to the net. Barkov between the legs. Unbelievable. Did you just do that, Alexander Barkov? The Panthers are back on top.
Hello and welcome back to the Florida Hockey Podcast. Justin Bedford alongside Noah Russo. And this week's episode of the podcast is brought to you guys by DraftKings. Football fans, the moment you've all been waiting for all season is right around the corner. And DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55, is bringing back their golden ticket giveaway with up to $55 million in prizes up for grabs. All you have to do is get your share. All you have to do to get your share of these huge prizes is enter DraftKings free Super Bowl prediction challenge. Once you submit your picks, you will get a free instant prize up to $25,000. And if you have the most predictions correct, you could win the top prize of $1 million. Damn, that's a lot of money. Download the app now, enter the free prediction challenge, answer questions like, who will score last? And boom, get ready to make it rain. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to its players since 2012, so they know a thing or two about big paydays. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN to enter the free $55 million Super Bowl prediction challenge. Everyone gets an instant prize up to $25,000 just for playing. So use promo code THPN now and enter the free $55 million Super Bowl challenge only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55. Noah, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'd take $1 million.
Yeah, that actually sounds like
it's a pretty good deal.
It sounds like a pretty good deal. I mean, I'm all about that.
100%.
Definitely have to jump on that. I mean, getting close, couple more weeks left of football. Both our teams are out of it.
Unfortunately. At least yours made the playoffs.
Yeah, and then yeah.
Mine was very close though.
Very close. You guys almost made the playoffs.
We did. We really did.
But you know, that Washington football team just too good.
Yeah. I mean,
that clutch win over the Eagles.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. Let's stick to hockey.
Yeah, stick to hockey. I guess we should. I mean, not a ton going on with the Panthers this week. I mean, specifically nothing. No games since our last episode.
Absolutely nothing.
Just sitting here waiting. It's going to be so weird. Like, we're going to like halfway through the season and the standings are going to look whack just because teams have played such like different number of games.
It's going to be so weird. I completely agree. It's
like I was looking at the standings last night and it's like, oh, this team's kind of in it, but then this team that's like just below them has only played like three games. Like Carolina's played three, Florida's played two.
Do you think there should be like a penalty on the teams that can't play because they had COVID outbreaks? Do you think like there should be some sort of repercussion? Obviously, we saw the Capitals get fined, I think $110,000. But that was because they actually broke the protocol. I mean, how do you like, would you penalize teams that while they don't break the protocol still get outbreaks?
I don't think I would, just because like if you're following the protocols and you're being cautious, like it obviously reduces your risk, but there's still the possibility that you get it, right? Like when you're not in a bubble, there's always ways for these outbreaks to occur. So like I don't like if you're following the protocols and you have an outbreak, like I don't fault the team or the players at all. I don't think there should be any sort of penalty there. But like we saw with the Washington Capitals, like if you're breaking the protocols, right, that have been pretty clearly outlined, I'd assume, to all the players, then yeah, of course, a fine makes sense.
Whose wife was it that complained on the on the Capitals. I can't remember. Russian guys. I want to say Dmitry Orlov, but maybe it was Ovechkin's wife. I don't know.
Could have been.
You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
I thought she made a good point that there was a lot of hypocrisy in just the rules. Like, I mean, these guys are literally sitting next to each other on a bench. No masks or anything. Like, breathing pretty heavily.
Yeah.
Yet you're going to tell them that they can't hang out in a hotel room together?
Yeah, and I get that. Like, there's a lot of questions around, like, the policies and how effective stuff really is when you're having these close contact. Like, a lot of it seems kind of arbitrary and not overly necessary. But at the same time, like, the guidelines were, you know, out there. The players knew them. They agreed to them. And they willingly broke them.
No, exactly.
So I get that it's a bad rule, but you knew the rule and you broke the rule.
That's the very good point, is that you signed on. You accepted these rules. And as stupid as you may think they are, you still agreed to them.
Yeah, it's like when I get a speeding ticket on the highway for going a smidge too fast.
I've never seen you speed, Justin. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's completely hypothetical.
Okay, this is a hypothetical. All right.
But if I'm going too fast on the highway, like, let's say the speed limit's 100 kilometers an hour, so 60 miles, and I'm going 120, then, you know, and I get a ticket for some reason because I'm going too fast. Like, I might think that, you know, it's dumb the speed limit is 100. It should be 120. But at the same time, like, I knew it wasn't, and I was going fast willingly. So, of course, there should be a punishment there. I should get a ticket.
Right.
But that's all hypothetical because I never get speeding tickets.
Exactly. I've never even seen you speed, period, let alone get a ticket for it.
I don't even know if I get my car over 120 kilometers an hour thing. But it's so, like, I fully get the – I get that it's not a great rule, but
– While these teams like Carolina, Dallas, they don't get penalized for having an outbreak, and they don't have to play, and obviously they can't practice, so that kind of sucks. But at the same time, you're penalizing other teams.
Yeah,
the Panthers weren't able to, like, really bounce, like, because momentum's a huge thing in the NHL. Like, the Panthers weren't able to build any momentum off of those games against Chicago.
No, because then you played the games, and now you have another 2 weeks or another week.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a little less than 2 weeks, but still, I mean, it seems like a very unfair situation for these teams that don't get outbreaks.
Yeah, and it. You know, and we saw it with other sports leagues. We saw it with the MLB and a little bit with the NBA. But I think the expectation was always that stuff like this was going to happen, right, that there would be delays. So I don't think it's, like, shocking to any team or any players that this stuff's going on and, you know, they maybe haven't played as many games as they would have liked. At the same time, you know, though, we are 2 weeks into a season and the Panthers are undefeated.
Right.
So that's got to be, you know, a bit of a win. And the nice thing is that when they are back and playing games, hopefully this week here, but you never know, like, they do have easier game. Like, they're kind of eased into this season a bit.
Yeah.
Is kind of what I'm getting at. Like, there's some good teams in their division, but, like, they missed their Tampa series. They missed their.
Exactly.
Dallas series, right? So they're set up their next two games, Blue Jackets, then they got two against the Red Wings, and then they got two against the Predators. The Predators and the Blue Jackets series, both hugely important. And then Detroit is just one where you gotta get two wins there.
Exactly.
Right. But then you're sitting in, it puts them in a situation where they could be really setting themselves up for success by getting off to a nice start here.
Yeah.
So the opportunity is there for that. Like, we've seen, you know, like, there are teams that have, you know, kind of slumped out of the gates and in such a short season. Like, we're already, you know, teams are already 10% of the way through the schedule, right? Like, it's early, but the pressure's on for some teams.
It 100% is.
In some of the divisions. Vancouver, just to name one.
Vancouver's not been living up to the potential. Although, as I recall, I'm pretty sure I put them as finishing sixth or maybe that was Winnipeg. Can't remember, but I remember putting Vancouver fairly.
I think
low.
You put Winnipeg second last because you, for some reason, have a vendetta against Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, and it's really not been going my way. Like, they played Ottawa, I think, three times now.
Yeah. Like, there was some good
you'll
games.
See in the long run, it'll pay off. I don't think I have Vancouver in the playoff. It's either Vancouver or Edmonton fighting for a playoff spot. I think I chose, but I mean,
yeah, the way that division shapes
so
up.
There's just so much lack of execution on the Canucks team. They were giving up so many turnovers.
Oh yeah. They look like a team that could really use like a Tyler Toffoli type or a Jacob Markstrom in net even.
Yeah, a Jacob Markstrom kind of guy in net. I mean, Holtby hasn't been bad from what I've seen.
Yeah, Demko's been a little inconsistent for
me.
Yeah,
Demko's been a little more iffy.
Right, and I think at least they went out and got Holtby in the summer after losing Markstrom.
Yeah, they've just been giving up a lot of on-man rushes. They just – Elias Pettersson has not been looking himself.
No, not at all. And it doesn't help when Tyler Myers is taking three interference penalties a game. I mean, what is that?
Sometimes, yeah.
I mean, I've never done that. I might have got two in a game, but three?
Yeah, he's going to have a hard time finding a job after this contract, I think.
Yeah. So question for you, Noah. Of all the teams that have played so far, played, you know, a decent amount of games, for better or for worse, which team has surprised you the most with their performance?
So I'm not going to say Montreal because Montreal is the obvious pick. And I can't say they surprised me because I had them in that spot. There's a lot of teams. I think probably most disappointing so far for me would have to be the Rangers.
Wow.
I thought the Rangers had more, but it's so hard. I mean, they played four games now. Thought the Rangers would be better. There's no other like real surprises. I mean, I know Minnesota's second in the division. In their division,
but I had them finishing third in that division.
You did, and
everyone was sleeping.
I just want to pull up their schedule. They played three teams now, right? And those three teams are the Kings, the Ducks, and the Sharks.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like it's so hard to. You know,
hard to say they've looked really good when they haven't played a good team yet.
I mean, we'll see. They don't play Colorado until January 30th, and that's their first good team. And that's just, I mean, that just is the division, right? So yeah, I'm gonna go with Rangers. I thought they would be better. They had some poor performances. That first one against the Islanders was really bad. And yeah,
I think for me, obviously I agree with the Rangers. I mean, really, you could put them and the Sabres because I thought both would be better than they have.
I didn't think the Sabres would be that good. So
no, but I think when we did our predictions, I think we had the Sabres second last. I think that was the consensus.
Yeah, the Devils. The Devils are deciding that they're going to be the best of the mediocre teams.
Yeah, so that's a bit. Of a surprise there. You guys were all, I don't know if you specifically when we had the episode, but some people were pretty low on the Capitals. They're 3-0-2.
I think I was one of those people.
That's 3-0-2 without their, you know, Russian players for one game. That's like half their team.
I mean, that's also three games against Buffalo.
Exactly. Points night.
Yeah, exactly.
So I get like the scheduling.
They lost both of their games to Pittsburgh, although 0-2, and it was 3-0-2. It was 2-1 overtime, one shootout loss, but
yeah. And I mean, those wins are against
Buffalo. I don't know how else to categorize it.
Yeah. But then the loss to Pittsburgh in the shootout when you don't have your players.
100%.
So, but for me, the most disappointing team, and it's not like they've been particularly bad, but we expect way more. And that's the Colorado Avalanche, who they're 3-2. So they have a winning record, but you split a series against the Blues, you drop one to the Kings, you don't dominate over the Ducks. I mean, obviously John Gibson's huge, but I would expect more out of them.
I think so too. I mean, yeah, they won against St. Louis. I mean, 8-0. That was a pretty convincing win, but to follow that up with a 3-2 win against LA and then a 4-2 loss against LA, probably not where they want to be. They probably want to be a lot more competitive. And I mean, from what I've seen, they've looked really good.
Yeah.
Because I think I watched the 3-2 win against the Kings. They looked really good. They're just not capitalizing on their opportunities. And it's reflecting on the scorecard, obviously, because they're not winning the games.
Yeah. I've seen them look really good. I've seen them not look quite as sharp in a couple games. The thing for me though, like when you're Vegas or when you're Colorado or even St. Louis, let's say in this division, like the way the schedule works is you go to California, you play each team twice, right? So that's like, if you don't win like 4 or 5 out of those 6 games, like that's gotta be a disappointment for your team.
100%.
Because just of how bad those teams are. And yeah, they drop one against the Kings, not great. Close one against the Ducks, force OT. So I'm not like, it's not like they've been bad. I thought they would be much better. And it's still early though. Like that's the thing too. Teams haven't had long training camps, so they're still working things out. So like really hard to get a read on how good anyone really is at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously Colorado would want to be in a better position than what they are now. I don't think it's going to matter in the long run, obviously. No. But yeah, no, these, and I can't really make, we can't really make any like comments about the Central Division, right? Like there's been so many games that have been going, you know, like the only teams we've really seen are Chicago, Detroit, and Columbus.
Yeah.
You know, and then sprinkle in a little of Nashville and Tampa Bay, but it's Carolina, we haven't seen enough. Like it's just, you can't really make any assumptions about that division. So, I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah, like looking at the standings right now, it's just a mess.
It really is, especially in the Central.
Yeah, the Central's not. It's all over the place. Stars with one game, Panthers with two, Hurricanes with three.
Florida, the Panthers are now one of two teams to be truly undefeated.
Them and the Stars.
Yep, them and the Stars. And the Stars have only played one game.
But, man, they look good.
They did. They obviously did. They were playing Nashville.
Who? We've talked a lot about Nashville, and we don't know why they're not better.
It just doesn't make sense. They have all these scoring like threats up front in like Duchesne, Johansson, like
Rocco Grimaldi,
like Victor Arvidsson, like, and then they have a stellar blue line, right? Ryan Ellis,
Roman Josi. My goodness.
I think Ekholm is still there.
You have Ellis, Josi, Ekholm, but then you have It's Dante Fabro, who's, you know, look, he's okay.
He's still young. He's
still a young player.
I think Yannick Weber's still there. I don't know if he's actually playing.
They signed
a PTO or something.
Yeah, the third playing they play right now is Borowacki and Benning.
Yeah, so, but first of all, he didn't even score a goal against Dallas.
No.
You know, and it's like, there's just so many things wrong in Nashville, and that's why I didn't understand when everybody was putting them in the playoff conversation. It's like, this team really isn't that good.
They should be.
Obviously, but
I don't know what it is, but hey, if it makes it easier on the Panthers, that's what you have to see. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. And I mean, Dallas scoring 5 power play goals in that game.
Elite.
Like,
I was just really happy because I have a couple of Dallas star players in our fantasy hockey league and they hadn't played yet.
Yes. I had Miro Heiskanen, so I got an assist somewhere.
I had Gurianov, so he finally got a goal per game player. Expect him to keep that pace all season. But yeah, no, with no Panthers hockey on this week, the big story is obviously the Line A for Dubois trade.
Yes, it is.
What did you make of the whole situation with Dubois and Columbus, with the benching in that game, with, you know, obviously he'd asked for a trade before, and then 2 days later, he's going to Winnipeg, Line A, back to Columbus, 2 players drafted 2 and 3, switching spots. What'd you make of the whole situation, and who do you think won the trade?
I mean, I'm still going back and forth on who won the trade. I think both teams made the absolute best of a worse situation.
Yeah, tough, like, situations for the teams.
Like, to be able to, because Line A wanted out of Winnipeg, Dubois wanted out of Columbus. Roslovic wasn't even playing for Winnipeg, was he?
No, he wasn't going to play because he wanted a trade.
Exactly. Like, you're able to get rid of 2 guys that don't want to play for you and get an elite guy in return. And that's true of both teams. I think it's an unbelievable trade for both teams. I think both teams win. I had to pick a winner. I'm going to say Columbus. I think Line A's upside, in the sense that he can be a 50-goal scorer, is huge. I still think of him that way. And then Roslovic, obviously, I think was probably playing as their third C in Winnipeg last season.
He played a lot on the wing last season, but he's had more success as a center.
Yeah, so I think it's just a fantastic trade. I'm giving the slight upside to Columbus, just based off of Line A's pedigree. But yeah, I'm not, because Dubois is a much more two-way guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, they're both very good players. Like, I mean, no one's questioning that. Like,
elite players. First liners, without a doubt. I mean,
yeah,
Dubois is a real 1C. Line A is a real, what is he, left wing? Right wing?
Both.
Yeah.
At least the left, though. Right shot on the left side.
Yeah. He's a first line winger. Like, undoubtedly, both teams are getting very talented guys. But I've switched my decisions about, like, 4 times about who actually won the trade. But right now, if you ask me, I'm going to say Columbus by a hair.
Yeah, it's definitely close. The whole benching situation with Dubois, what were your thoughts on that? Because that was pretty highly publicized.
So I wasn't watching that game. I watched overtime of that game.
Yeah.
And it didn't click to me that Dubois wasn't playing, and I wasn't really paying attention to that. And then I switched over to another game after. And then I saw a tweet. And it was like, he's only played 3 minutes, 55 seconds. I was like, yeah. There's no way. This is like, so I looked on the NHL app and I actually saw it. He played all in the first period. Like, I can't remember the last time I've seen a player get benched like that.
Well, you saw the video of the shift that he had.
Obviously. And then you see the video of the shift and you're like, this guy's either drunk or he's just not trying. He's literally just trying to beat get out.
Yeah. For me, so I actually did watch this game because I was at work. I was tracking it. And so I knew Dubois wasn't out there. I started watching just after he got benched and watched the rest of the game. He wasn't playing. And then later I saw the shift. Obviously, yeah, complete lack of effort on that shift. And like, I get like, you don't want to be in Columbus, right? For whatever the reason is, you don't want to be there. But like, these are your teammates you're with here. You know, you should be willing to put in at least a little bit more effort for them, which just wasn't the case. And then they showed a couple of shots of him throughout the game, and he's just on the bench, like chatting it up with
like he had his gloves off and he was like playing with his hands at one point.
Yeah, I think he had like smelling salts. He's just talking, you know, having a blast on the bench, and it's like, all right, this guy doesn't want to be there. But
like, I get that there's that, but we also don't know the full extent of the story.
No, of course
not. Were it to get to the point where he's acting like that on the bench and during the game, you have to wonder, like, what the hell happened for this like complete disconnect to occur?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he wasn't like that in the first games.
No. And we don't know. Yeah. Again, we don't know what led to that. But yeah, if I'm the coach and I see that type of shift and then I see him just having a blast on the bench, it's like, great, stay there.
Yeah.
So fully getting the benching from that perspective. With regards to who do I think won the trade? It's really tough to call.
It's such a tough call.
But I'm picking Winnipeg. And first and foremost, Winnipeg needed that second line center to slot in behind Mark Scheifele. And they get a really, really good one in Pierre-Luc Dubois. I think Columbus will miss having that center that can drive play, do the things that Dubois does. I don't think they really have anyone that can step up and fill that.
I don't think Domi's a 1C. I think he's a 2C at best.
Well, even if he was a 1C, like it's a different type of 1C. Like, I imagine like playing against Pierre-Luc Dubois sucks because he's so big, so fast, so strong. Playing as Max Domi, the guy's like 5'10". Like, all right, let him skate in circles, goes to the net, I'll cross check. I'm like, I'm not as concerned about that. But to have a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's a genuine like game changer in so many different facets of the game, they don't really have a guy that can step in and, you know, make up for that. In Winnipeg, because they have so many wingers, they can lose Patrick Laine and they still have Wheeler and Connor and Ehlers. And that's exceptional depth right there. So I think, like, if it was me and you asked me who would I rather have, Dubois or Laine, to build like a team around, I'm taking Dubois 100%. Laine, bit too one dimensional for me. Scores goals, great on the power play, but 5-on-5. Doesn't always do much. And the other part of it too is that, you know, I love Patrick Laine. He seems like a great guy, like an absolute blast. Ever since that, like, his draft interview that he did from his bed on his like FaceTime.
Yeah.
Right. Like, love the guy. I don't necessarily think he's gonna mesh the best with John Tortorella.
Well, that's what I was thinking. The first thing I thought when I heard Laine was going there is I thought, there's another star player that Columbus is going to lose in a year or two.
Yeah. Like, I think in the short term, like, I think Laine will get there. And I think, first of all, it's really tough because it's going to take a while for both guys to actually get with their new teams and into some games. But I think Laine will probably get off to a pretty good start in Columbus. But to me, I think, like we saw kind of with Dubois, that relationship with John Tortorella, I think it'll be really good at the start, but then I think it'll get to a point where he starts tuning the coach out, and that's when things will start to go south. Whereas I don't see that anything like that happening with Dubois and like Paul Maurice.
No, and obviously Dubois' dad is in the
Manitoba Moose.
Manitoba Moose coaching, or great team. I think he's assistant coach. These are both guys that are going to be RFAs after the 2021-2022 season, right? Or sure. Is Line yeah, I think A, so. I something like that. I can't remember exactly. I know that's it for Dubois. Line A, I think, is the same, but I could be wrong. I think that Winnipeg long term has a lot more chances of re-signing Dubois than Columbus has of re-signing Line A. Obviously, I think Roslovic is a very good pickup for them. I think he'll be there for the long term. He's an Ohio guy. Like, that's where
he played
in the U16 Columbus Blue Jackets. Like, he was in that organization already.
Yeah, I fully expect Jack Roslovic to be a very good player for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I think that might be the deciding factor in this trade.
So Laine is actually an RFA after this season.
Yeah. But I think if you're Columbus, I don't think you make this trade if you don't think you have a very, very good chance of re-signing Patrick Laine. And, you know, obviously finished GM there in Columbus.
Yes, yes. I think that's going to work a lot towards...
I assume he's going to sign like a nice long-term deal in Columbus and be their guy, but I'm not sure he stays in Columbus for the duration of that contract.
Yeah, there's going to be like, there's been too many instances in Columbus of star players leaving, and you kind of get the sense that there's a reason, there's something in the water.
I don't know. Columbus seems like a nice city.
Yeah,
I've heard good things about Columbus.
I know the Russian guys want to live either in the south or in a big city where, you know, like New York. I know that was Bobrovsky and Panarin. I think that was the reasoning behind those moves. You don't want to have to play in Columbus, Ohio. And then, I mean, do they even have other sports teams?
College teams?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, because like Columbus, like, because you have the three big cities in Ohio, right?
Right, right, right. Obviously.
So there's just teams like around in the general vicinity.
Yeah, but it's like Columbus wouldn't be my go-to as a player.
No, but I think like, would it be my go-to? No, but I would
argue. It would not be the worst. Let's make that clear.
No, I think Winnipeg might be the worst.
Oh, yeah. I would like Winnipeg would be the worst, but. Just the fact that his dad's
like
there.
No disrespect to Winnipeg, because like I go there quite a bit, but not a top 10 destination, that's for sure. Especially in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, and did you see they played the Senators last night? They had a 9 p.m. local start time.
Yeah.
Like 9 p.m. local starts. That would suck.
The schedule's been a little funky.
Straight up, that would suck.
But, yeah, so, like, I don't think either of the two cities involved in this trade are really, you know, players' top picks. The thing for me, too, is, like, Pierre-Luc Dubois, like, playing for John Tortorella, like, that's a tough coach to play for, right? Like, he's a hard coach. And, like, but, like, so is Paul Maurice. But Paul Maurice's got to feel like a vacation for Pierre-Luc Dubois compared to...
Exactly. I mean, I don't think it gets much worse than Tortorella. And Dubois is going to have the advantage of it in Columbus. He was their guy. He was their best forward.
Yeah.
Right? He was undoubtedly, like... I mean, as much as I love, like, other guys on their teams, and I was watching a little bit of Columbus yesterday, and Texier looks...
I've been saying it for years.
I know you've been saying it ever since that first playoff series they won 4-0 against Tampa. That was the first time I heard you talking about Texier. But yeah, I mean, he's been looking great, but Dubois was the number one guy there. And he goes to Winnipeg. Suddenly he's not gonna have that pressure. He's arguably like number three. Is that where you would slot him? Where would you slot him? Man. In terms of just offensive talent.
Offensively?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not because obviously I think Seth Jones makes a good point for being the best on Columbus. I think Seth Jones is a stud. I mean, Zach Werenski as well. but just
I think I'd have Werenski above Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
But both excellent number one defensemen. Okay, offensive talent in Winnipeg?
Yeah, I mean, because you've got Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers,
Connor.
Kyle Connor. Like, you've got some pretty solid studs on offense. Where do you see Dubois in the, like, totem pole of talent?
Well, that's really tough. I know a lot of people really like Mark Scheifele. I'm probably a little lower on him than some people are. But still pretty high. Offensively, I think, boy, it's tough. I really like Nick Ehlers.
Because, I mean, my point really is, like, Dubois, you're undoubtedly your number one offensively on Columbus. But he slots in Winnipeg. Like, regardless of who you put in front of him, I don't think he's number one.
No. No, he's probably number three or four to me.
Number three is the number I was going for. I mean, I could see four. I think Ehlers is very good. I think Connor's very good. But that's a whole different dynamic for him going into Winnipeg as well, regardless of how much it may be distasteful to actually play in Winnipeg.
Yeah, like, I think, yeah, there's definitely less pressure. Like, Patrick Laine, like, he goes to Columbus and it's like, that's his team. He's the guy. Right, they need a guy to score goals. That's what he's there to do.
And that's kind of, Laine wasn't that number one in Winnipeg, and now he slots into number one in Columbus.
Yeah, and that's part of it too, is that's something he always desired, was he wanted more ice time, he wanted more responsibility, more of the puck. He wasn't getting that in Winnipeg just purely because of the talented forwards that they have.
I mean, but he has a significant obstacle in John Tortorella.
Yeah, he does. And it's going to be, I think, a while before we know who came out on top of this trade. Right now, I think it looks very even. I think both teams did pretty well considering the circumstances. So to me, I think it's great. It's a blockbuster trade. We don't see too many of them. So,
yeah, I think it was just really fun to see a trade like that happen. Like, I think that was just...
Well, and it, like...
Yeah.
It seemed like something that had been simmering for a while. Like, we knew Laine wanted out. We knew Dubois wanted out.
Just with the Pierre LeBrun, like, tweet, we knew that, like, at least 12 teams were interested.
Yeah, like, it was kind of something that just simmered for a while. And then once that game happened... It just seemed to just expedite things rapidly and get things moving. So it's great. I'm curious to see if we see more trades this season, just with the obviously with the situation with COVID and the border and quarantining with the new team. Right. Like, there's a bit of a risk too. And I think that also factored in the trade. Like, Patrick Laine was hurt, so he wasn't even playing.
Yeah.
And Pierre-Luc Dubois wasn't playing either just because he didn't want to. It's 2 weeks that, like, you're without a significant piece in your lineup, but it's probably 2 weeks where you were going to be without them either way. So I don't see that being a factor, but we'll see how much more movement goes down throughout the league this year, because I don't anticipate it'll be too much. We did see the Ian Cole trade, big trade.
I mean, that's just
seismic. I know.
We're less affected because it's not in Canada or on the Eastern Seaboard, but, like, that made ripples throughout the Western Hockey Hemisphere.
Oh, I know. I was getting texts about it. Ian Cole,
Greg Patterson. Like, these are two studs on D. Like, I'm still trying to get over the trade, to be honest. Like, this Dubois trade seems like so insignificant.
Oh yeah, it really does. It's that was a big one for sure. I'll remember where I was when I heard the news about Ian Cole getting traded. But yeah, I think
it was just nice to have a trade that big.
It is, because you see it all the time in other leagues, like the NHL, like, in terms of
basketball, has them all the time.
Yeah, basketball has them all the time. The NFL, you maybe get one or two in off season. the MLB, I don't follow super closely, but it seems like a lot goes on there.
You do. Like, I just, there was at least three, like, all-star players got traded in the offseason. At least three. Like, yeah. Three separate trades.
Yeah. So, I think, like, a trade like this is good for just the league in general to have a transaction that big. One thing I'm kind of curious about, though, is, like, the long-term impact of this trade. Where in other leagues, like with the NBA, you see players have quite a bit of power, right? Like players force themselves out of, you know, cities and off teams all the time. We saw it with James Harden just a couple weeks ago. This is really like, it doesn't happen that often in hockey that players like force their way out of a city. But that is pretty much what happened here with Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Mm-hmm.
Like he did. You know, I'm not sure Winnipeg was his first choice of place to go, but he was able to force himself out of a team in a situation he didn't want. I'm curious to see if we see more players trying to do this in the future as the league continues to get more really talented young players coming in. If any of them use that leverage to try and force themselves off, you know, to new cities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
like, part of me would like to see it, but another part of me is like, it would significantly affect how we perceive the game, in my opinion.
I think it would, and I think it would really harm smaller market teams that have trouble attracting star players anyways. At the same time, though, I think it would be good for growing the sport and getting new people interested. Like, that kind of stuff's exciting.
Yeah. Right?
Like, when a big trade goes down, like, it grabs people's attention.
Obviously it's happened like before in the past. And I'm mostly thinking of the Eric Lindros saga. So it happens. It's just very rare in the hockey.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see if we see more of it. Yeah. Obviously Eric Lindros is the big notable example.
I'm going to say right now, I don't think it becomes a pattern. I don't think it becomes a thing.
Well, I'm not saying it becomes like something that everyone does. I'm thinking more along, like just more often.
Yeah. I'm going to say not for no, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Yeah. And I mean, like, obviously this is a big trick because the players are really good, but there's a lot of other like young players who have not broken into the league who have requested trades and like very recently, like Jesse Puljujärvi did last year, Julius Honka, Elias Andersson. So like there's more of that of players I think trying it. It's a bit different when they're actually like established good players like Laine and Dubois are.
Right.
Which is why obviously it ends a lot differently than it did for Puljujärvi or for Andersson, or I don't know what Julius Honka is doing. He just passed through waivers last week. So I think we might see maybe a little bit of an increase. Don't know if it'll be a lot. But we'll just have to wait and find out. Anything else you want to add, Noah? End of the podcast? Final thoughts?
Looking forward to a Panthers game in the near future.
Hopefully. Apologies, we couldn't get Jared Shea on the podcast today. He was busy watching the Toronto Raptors because he's a fake Raptors fan. That's a true story. So we couldn't get him on today. Hopefully we'll get him on sometime eventually. Maybe. Maybe we'll see. That guy's a bit inconsistent. Thank you to everyone tuning in to this week's episode of the podcast. We will be back on Thursday with a brand new episode, and we will see you all then. Center, Barkov looking to get a step on Metz.